It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. When you're working out at the gym or sitting at a noisy bar, you've probably watched the scrolling text at the bottom or top of the nearby TV screen to find out what's being said. Closed captions have been available for TV programming since the early days of Julia Child. While the service caters to people with impaired hearing, it can be useful for anyone in any number of situations. Online, captions are mandated for some videos. Streaming sites such as Netflix offer captioning services, and you can even add captions to the Facebook videos you post. But how does closed captioning work? Who or what brings the words to our screens? VITAC, a Pittsburgh-based company, is responsible for at least half of the captions on the air nationwide and a growing amount of our on-demand streaming. VITAC Chief Operations Officer Chuck Karlovitz is here to give us a look at the world of closed captioning. He joins us in Studio A. Chuck Karlovitz, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And if you have a comment or question for our guest, if there's anything you've ever wondered about when it comes to closed captioning, now is your chance to ask your long-held question. 412-246-2002, the number to call. 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM or online at ESSPGH, or I should say on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EP Live. So, Chuck Karlovitz, explain first of all what, just give people the basic thumbnail sketch of what closed captioning is.
Well, closed captioning is a way that we can communicate for deaf and hard of hearing individuals on television, also for video streaming, whether it's on the web or privately. We do a lot of work for city councils and folks who have things that they want to post on the web, either live or after the fact. Closed captioning really relies on two things. The person, the captioner who's actually captioning it, they have to be able to hear what's said and hear it clearly. So the audio source is really important. And then the closed captions are actually generated by mostly in the U.S. steno captioners, but also voice writers who use voice recognition technology. And what they do is they hear the actual audio of the broadcast, and then they're transcribing what's actually being said as best as they can. Most dialogue on television, for example, is probably at a rate of 200 to 225 words a minute, sometimes up to 250 for shows where there are multiple speakers, maybe say like O'Reilly Factor where they have multiple guests who typically talk over one another. It's very difficult.
Yeah, that's an interesting example you used there because I'm guessing it would be – that would be one show where it might be hard to decipher – exactly what's being said. I'm curious because you mentioned stenographers, so a person who can really go fast on a keyboard, and we've seen that happen in courtrooms. But you also mentioned that it can be done by a machine through voice recognition. So how much of it is done by a machine and how much of it is done by a human being?
The majority of captioning that you see on television and on the web is probably generated by steno captioners. They are the highest end, most skilled court reporters in the nation, and they're all over. Most of them work from their homes, not from fixed facilities. They tend to be the top 1% of people who started in court reporting, graduated from court reporting schools, and have the steno theory because steno is a phonetic language. They don't use keyboards. So one of the common misperceptions of most people is that they're using a typical keyboard like you or I would use for a computer or a laptop. They do not. It is a language that actually doesn't have nearly as many keys. So they have multiple strokes simultaneously to create different syllabic sounds. And they're taught that in school, and then they use that ability to basically keep up because it would be impossible to type that fast and actually keep up with the pace of speech. So on the other side, you can use voice recognition technology. Now, most voice recognition technology that's machine generated, and what I mean by that is audio is played into a box and is basically recognized and translated from voice to text, only gets roughly 70 to 75% accuracy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to guess that a lot, that's going to end up being a lot of times what's off. We have Jan on Twitter who says, one local TV show has such bad closed captioning that it makes me laugh. So does that mean that a machine might be the culprit?
It could be. There's actually two forms of voice recognition. There's what's called re-speak. That's where someone, a live person who is a voice writer, listens to the audio similar to the way a steno captioner would and basically speaks into a mic like you and I are. And then it has recognition technology that recognizes what they're saying. Now, they speak in a very monotone, robotic pace to try and get better translation. They can't have voice inflection. It tends to be affected if the person has a cold. They don't get as good of recognition with their dictionaries, because whether you're using steno or voice, dictionaries have to be built, because not every word is going to be automatically translated. When you're a steno captioner, you have to put in the strokes in your software that will say this combination of keys equals this particular syllabic sound. And if you have a multisyllabic word, it's this stroke plus this stroke. If you're a voice writer, you have to basically speak in and train the engine to recognize this is the way my voice sounds when I speak this word. The caller's question is
Actually, it's somebody on Twitter,
the person who's sending in the Twitter. That's a very common thing that we hear from complaints. The FCC now has a way for viewers to complain about the quality of captions, and we frequently get questions and complaints. And a lot of the times it can be anything in the data transmission path. Caption data still passes over modems for about 50% of the work for television. So it's using very old technology to get from a captioner's home or from a captioning company's fixed facility to the actual network or cable network's broadcast encoder. And that encoder really is what inserts the caption data into the live feed. So that's how live captioning works. There's also pre-recorded captioning, which is different. That's where we get assets, video assets, you know, on tape, not so much on tape anymore, but, you know, from different producers. And then you actually create the captions, because you have the ability to play them over back and forth over and over again, create the text, time it, and then you send the producer or the network a file that is a time file that is then encoded into the actual video. So normally when you're seeing a lot of errors on television or on the web, it's probably live, and that has a number of particular failure points. It could be a bad captioner. More than likely, if you're seeing it frequently throughout a broadcast, a lot of unusual characters or poorly misspelled words, it may point to something else in the transmission path of the caption data as it goes from the captioner's home, possibly over phone lines or IP, but also then as it goes up and down on the satellites, it can be harmed, and that makes the caption data appear
incorrect. So the process of getting from point A to point B can be a problem. And so just so people get a clear picture of this, a lot of the humans that are the stenographers that are doing this, they're sitting at home.
They are.
And they're watching TV.
They sit at home, and they are either using an audio line with an audio coupler that connects into an audio coupler at the local station or at a network, or they can be receiving a stream feed that is a secure stream feed where they actually can see their video, because they don't all live in the time zone of the actual broadcast they're captioning. So if it's possible and it can be set up, sometimes we have a number of clients that we do work with that we've set up where our captioners can see a little window over their captioning software and actually see that their captions are appearing on, say, a broadcast in Philadelphia that they're doing for a local news station, even though they live in Nevada.
So all these people have to be set up in their homes. Because I'm guessing that a lot of people would have guessed that these captioners – would have been at some, you know, high tech center with in a place where there's tons of monitors and they're you know, typing away.
Yes. So most of the large captioning companies, Vitech's the largest U.S. captioning company. We have a giant tech center in Canonsburg, PA, in South Point. So we pull down a lot of satellite feeds, and we have what you're describing, and we do have some people who are in house, and we have control rooms, the works. But the majority of the people who caption are working from their homes.
And so, why is that?
Well, two reasons. A long time ago, 15 years ago, the captioning industry was from fixed facilities. But the difficulty is there are only a certain number of qualified court reporters who can actually do live captioning. So they you have to have a really clean steno theory. You have to be able to keep up and be able to write the what's being spoken at a very fast pace. So that really limits the number of people. Well, as the captioning mandates came out after the telecom bill in 1997 and the mandates went up of how many hours per day had to be broadcast, you just ran into a volume problem of how are you going to get more people to do this work, because people can only write so many hours a day before their hands get sore.
Right.
So you had to look for a different model, and it became evident that we were going to have to go outside of fixed facilities, and that's what pretty much evolved out of the growth of the number of hours that were mandated by the government to caption.
We're talking with Chuck Karlovitz. He is the Chief Operations Officer at Vitac, which is a Pittsburgh-based company responsible for at least half of the captions on the air nationwide and a growing amount of our on-demand streaming. If you have a comment or question for him, 412-246-2002, the number to call. Email again is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Now, Vitac did the closed captioning for the Super Bowl on Sunday, right?
So that's correct.
Talk about how that kind of process works and what happens when you're responding to a live event. In some cases, if it's scripted, you can, I'm guessing, get a copy of the transcript. But in this case, nobody knows what's going to happen or what Al Michaels or Chris Collinsworth is going to say. So how does that work?
That's correct. So the majority of the programs that most captioners do, actually, they don't receive scripts for. They do a lot of research online. We have a giant production coordination department that gets, say, for the Super Bowl, as much information ahead of time with the networks will share with us.
So like rosters and things like that?
Exactly. And normally, if you're doing the Super Bowl, you're probably captioning one of the network's feeds, whether it's CBS or Fox. You're probably doing the games all season long. You have a number of captioners who do those games, so they have rosters built. It's all the extra stuff that makes the Super Bowl difficult, because you have to put in the names of the teams plus anybody who was associated with that team that may have won in a past Super Bowl, last year's Super Bowl MVPs, the big plays from last year that they may refer to.
You get people
history.
That say that they're sports fans, and hey, give me the Super Bowl, will you, Chuck?
Yeah. So
you do get that?
You mean
I'm do you not, get people that, that go to you and say, hey, I want to be the person that does the captioning for the Super Bowl?
Oh, we do have some as they get more experienced. Usually it's kind of it's feared, because the Super Bowl reaches and touches so many people, you know, nationwide. It's the most widely watched single event at any one time, probably. In fact, it just had the largest ratings ever in the history of television.
Every year it sets another record, and this year it was 114 million.
Exactly. So it's a bit nerve-wracking, because if you're that captioner, you realize that if you misstroke and you make a mistake, it's going out and everyone's going to see it if they have the captions on. So you have to prepare a lot. You never know what they're going to say, but you are somewhat ingrained to the normal process of the game. In some ways, it may actually be a little bit more difficult to deal with some of the pregame than it is the actual game. And then obviously in the postgame, you never know what's going to be said.
Sure. Yes, oftentimes to the detriment of the person who says it. But are you as a company saying, you know, obviously Vitac provides – already has a track record. But are you saying to yourself, you know, we want to be the company that's bringing that event on closed captioning to people?
Yes. So the Super Bowl is one large event that we do. In a few weeks we'll do the Academy Awards. And in some ways, that's even more of a wild card. We do want to do it. You have to have the right number of people to do it, the background, the right type of training for your captioners, what to do if this situation happens, what, and to really help them prep for the event. And then there's also a huge amount of redundancy behind the scenes, so that if there's a failure at any point, we actually have two captioners write the Super Bowl, one that's in our fixed facility at Vitac in Canonsburg, but we also have somebody who's remotely writing it in case something were to happen at our facility, because NBC in the last Super Bowl needs to have the assurance that captions are going to be there no matter what, because there are mandates and they can be fined if they're not.
Right. That's a good point. And are you responsible for those commercials too?
No. Normally commercials are pre-recorded captions, so we would produce some of those. That's usually directly from the ad agencies or from the network who puts us in touch with the producers of commercials. It's unusual to write a commercial live. If you have to, it's usually not preferred because captions are normally slightly delayed. Live captions are. It takes about 3 to 6 seconds from the time a captioner hears the actual audio to the time it appears on your television. So there's a delay. And that really doesn't work well for commercials.
Let's take a call from Jack in Pittsburgh. Hi, Jack. You're on with Chuck Karlovitz.
Hi. You mentioned that the stenographers have a special device that they use to capture what's said, and it has a special keyboard that doesn't have all the characters on it. So I'm wondering if what comes out of that device, is it actual sentences that a normal person can read, or does that need to be translated a second time before it's actually put onto the screen?
That's a really good question. So they use a steno machine, which has a keyboard on it. It's actually like a little mini computer in a sense, but it outputs via USB cable into a computer that then has the actual captioning software on it that translates the steno strokes that they write, and that translation happens against the dictionaries of the actual English words. So what comes out of the machine you really couldn't read unless you were actually a court reporter or a stenographer, because it looks like just little combinations of letters and characters that you really couldn't read unless it was translated.
How much more is involved in this than just simple transcription? For example, I understand that you take things like you knows when they're excessive out. How do you know when to do that? What if there's like a script for a show, let's say where the character is supposed to say you know a lot because they're hemming and hawing about responding honestly to another character in a show.
Mm. So if it's live, you kind of have to pick your spots of how am I going to keep up. You tend to drop you knows and things if there are too many of them.
Right.
But in a pre-recorded program, we try and caption everything verbatim. So we may have to play the video over and over and over again to capture it. But there is a level of readability that you have to kind of keep up with so that as you go through shot changes, you're not having the dialogue of the caption lag behind the actual shot change and you know what's going on in the scene. You don't see as much of that anymore because the readability of the hard of hearing and the deaf community has really improved since captioning started, you know, way back in 1985. Because it's been on so long now, they're finding that the readability levels of children who are deaf, especially born deaf, is far greater now and far superior than it was in the past because they've been exposed to captioning all their life, whereas their parents, if they were deaf, probably weren't until much later in life. So
I guess another question would be, are the works always transcribed exactly as said, or are some things just a matter of interpretation?
As much as possible, it's verbatim, and that's what we shoot for. If you're seeing where it's dropped a lot, that could be because of a readability desire of the producer. But normally in our company, we try and be verbatim as much as possible. The hard of hearing and deaf community really don't want censorship, and that's always a tough issue.
Right. And then there's a question about accents, which I'll get to. But let's take another call from James, who is on the road. Hi, James. How are you?
Oh, hello. I would just like to preface this by saying I really love your show.
Thank you.
And I have a deaf cousin, and, well, this is sort of going through maybe it's an urban legend, but at one time in Eastern Europe, they were giving a news report, and they had the little bubble at the bottom where the woman was signing, and towards the end of the sign-off, she just said, this is entire propaganda. Do not believe what I've just signed you. And I was wondering, is there a moral responsibility? I mean, as I was mentioning to the man that received the call, I mean, you're talking about your, and your. There's a lot of different ways you can interpret that sound. Does that ever happen in the closed caption community?
Okay, we've got a couple questions here. One is you were asking about whether you were talking about an instance in Europe with a signer who was upset with what was being said and felt at least wanted to qualify what she was signing, which she felt was propaganda. So I don't know that comes up necessarily with what you're doing, Chuck, but that would be one question. And then the other one was your, and your, and how do you hear the difference? I guess you just have to recognize proper grammar.
Correct. Most captioners have really strong English backgrounds. You really need one to be, whether you're a court reporter or a steno captioner. So homonyms, your, and your, here, things like that. You really do have to understand the difference. That is something that usually weeds candidates out when they're either applying to us. If they don't have strong theory, it can appear. But also, it really gets weeded out. It tends to get weeded out in court reporting school. The other question is all captioners have a moral responsibility, but most captioners – well, actually all that I know of that work for – definitely for our company, but others, they signed professional agreements. They really are instructed to write what's said. They're not really supposed to edit and put their own editorial in.
Probably a good idea. Yeah. And last question about accents. For example, when you subtitle a program with a strong accent, for example, you did the captions for the program that we all know and love, Honey Boo Boo, and the mother's thick Southern accent was factored in. Explain that process.
So for that particular program, her accent her colloquial accent is so strong that the producers of the show actually subtitled when she was speaking certain parts because to the human ear, it was very hard for people to discern. So what you see when you watch that program is they actually had a subtitler, and you can tell the difference between subtitles and captions because subtitles just appear as words that look like in a movie, if you were going to see a French movie and it had English subtitles. Captions have a black background with white lettering, so it looks like a box that's superimposed over the actual video. We actually caption around their subtitles, so we would blank our captions for when they actually had provided the subtitle portion of the video. So we typically get the video either before its last final cut, that it's sweetened perfectly. But that particular show comes with subtitles on it, and then we caption everything else around it. The reason they're doing that is because you and I really wouldn't understand a lot of the dialogue, and she's such a prominent part of the show, they felt that they needed to do it to make it the hit that it is.
Do you do that with stuff like Pittsburgh Dad?
You can do it with stuff like Pittsburgh Dad, yes. It really just depends on how hard it is to understand. We do a lot of things that have foreign speakers in it, government teleconferences, things like that really don't appear on air but to appear to a smaller private group. And that's one of the most difficult things to do is someone who has a thick foreign accent. You have to kind of pick your spots. And we always tell our captioners – when in doubt, leave it out. If you really don't know or you feel like that was something, a swear word that somebody should not have said, if you're not sure, just leave it out.
Well, we'll put examples on our website of automated captioning and captions done by Vitech employees from the YouTube show, the aforementioned Pittsburgh Dad. This has been fascinating, a behind-the-scenes look at how closed captioning works with the Chief Operations Officer of Vitech, a Pittsburgh-based company responsible for at least half of the captions on the air nationwide and a growing amount of our on-demand viewing, Chuck Karlovitz. Chuck, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Coming up, we'll visit Pittsburgh's Mexican War Streets. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.